to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it?
Yes.
Good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they going to say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show them a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know this.
That's it. I'm done.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. Half time out. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures are down 5. I'm reading here about the attack of the debt tsunami. We have Lou here. We got to talk about this. Lou, how are you, buddy?
I'm good. How are you this morning?
I'm doing all right, except I'm worried about the debt tsunami.
Okay. So
coronavirus pushes global debt to record high.
What is the debt tsunami?
The IIF, whoever the hell they are, said global debt would break new records in the coming months to reach $277 trillion by the end of the year. Among advanced nations, debt surged above 432% of GDP in the third quarter, a 50 percentage point increase from 2019. It's a lot. What are we going to do on this? In emerging markets, debt levels rose to over 248% of GDP, with Lebanon, China, Malaysia, and Turkey experienced the biggest rises in non-financial sector debt. So there's a problem that, what are you going to do with that one, Lou?
yeah, but you and I have talked about this. Nobody pays attention to that. And we seem to be in a position where, from a government perspective anyway, nobody wants to hear about debt when we are basically forcing a significant portion of the economy into either debt spending or deficit spending or bankruptcy. And I assume that's the remedy for much of this debt will be in some cases, citywide bankruptcies, for public debt, and then personal bankruptcies for private debt.
Okay. Where does I don't know if I've ever been involved so much. I mean, I haven't been involved in one, thank God. But have you ever heard? I mean,
In other words, Chief, I think there's very little expectation on the part of policymakers that this stuff is ever going to get repaid, or that there is going to be some mechanism to buy our way or remedy the debt with money. I don't think there's any plan to grow the economy in such a way that we generate enough revenue to begin spending this stuff down. And frankly, there's no political will for it.
There better be, Lou. There better be some sort of a... The thing I'm searching for here, my attorney and silver tongue friend, I don't think I've ever seen, shall we say, sequential bankruptcies in my lifetime or anything I've ever read about. I mean, I'm sure they have been... What I'm talking about is let's bring it down to its lowest common denominator. I own a building. I have a mortgage. I have a business. Maybe I own two or three buildings. And all of a sudden, one of the buildings is in downtown Chicago. And we just keep pushing this. We're closed. We're closed. We're closed. We think we can make it a few months because I'm not one of these guys that has zero equity in the business. I got quite a, I'm just hypothetically. I have quite a bit. And so I've been able to hang in there with equity for people not paying me. I'm still paying the mortgages and blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, one of the buildings...
More importantly, you're still paying the taxes.
Right. Well, but then I'm going to appeal some of those because I'm going to say my revenue's way down. And in Chicago, I'm no expert. But I think a lot of your property taxes are based on revenue, not just the square footage of the place. Not like a house. I mean, I think, Lou. So, I think if you... if your revenue drops dramatically over a couple of years, I think you can appeal. Whether how far you get with that, I don't know. John Flanagan would know more about that. So maybe we'll tee that one up on Monday. But anyway, where all of a sudden now the building declares bankruptcy, which means I'm never going to get paid, and now I'm down to where I went through most of my equity, which I did. You know, I took my shot for the team. So like the second his bankruptcy is approved, then I have to declare mine. And maybe if I owe a bank enough, if it's a small bank, and everything was going swimmingly for 10 years, maybe now they have a problem. I mean, are we in danger of something like that, I guess is my question.
Well, I don't know, but that's a logical progression. What happens when, for example, and we've talked about this coming for a number of years. What happens when you get a mass exodus out of these lockdown states and people move to places where the lockdown is being pursued, this leads me to a topic I wanted to talk about anyway, where the lockdown is being pursued more logically, and suddenly the lockdown states don't have any more revenue or have such a drop in revenue that they can't fund their pensions, and they continue to shut down essential services because the pension debt is rising to such an extent that they have no discretionary spending capability left.
Well, I think, Lou, that when you say that, I'm going to push back a hair because I'm going to say it just didn't start this year. If the governor of
this is exacerbating the actions by the government, the state and local governments, to shut down businesses, to deliberately blow up their economic engines, or throw wrenches into them, or whatever metaphor you want, is it's accelerated a process.
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
The weakness that has been there for a decade, maybe two.
I think it's a massive difference. I'm not following what the governor of Indiana is doing, but Indiana has pretty much a balanced budget. I don't think they have much of a pension issue. So if their governor goes squirrely and shuts stuff down for 2 or 3 months when he shouldn't have, or she shouldn't have, it's a he, in retrospect shouldn't have, but obviously maybe he thought what he was doing was right, whatever. It's nowhere near as big a deal as Jay Pritzker doing it, because it says to me that this guy has zero perspective on the problems of this state. I mean, he has no idea where he thinks this is coming from, or whether he thinks Biden's going to bail him out and send him a $20 billion check. I don't know. But what I do know, Lou, is something that you'll never hear on national TV. It's just, I was mentioning this, my significant other is, obviously very much right wing. But we deal with that. And it's the left, or anybody really, the right to a certain extent, they look at it differently. They look at a big company decides that they shouldn't pay taxes and they go overseas and all that crap. And they basically steal, my opinion, they steal from the government. They get the right people that they hired from the IRS, whatever, somehow or another, they get this massive tax dodge. It never passes the smell test. But of course, anybody who's in business will say, geez, chief, they're not doing anything illegal. Come on. It doesn't pass the smell stuff. And in fact, it smells like a kid who just pooped in his pants, right? I mean, it's that bad. I mean, when you're paying 5% when other people are paying 35%. So it stinks. And over a long period of time, that causes, we're down to 7% of the tax money the government gets is from corporations. Used to be like 17. Seven's not very much, Lou. I mean, the amount of money these guys are making. Just saying.
But, Chief, let me drag us back to the topic we were discussing. I don't think there's any expectation on the part of policymakers, at least right now, whether it's 7% or 17%. I don't think there's any expectation on the part of policymakers that this debt issue is going to be resolved.
Okay, what I tried to get to clumsily and I didn't get there, Lou, is that if you look at, everybody thinks that this federal government is this massive gorilla in the room. And to a certain extent they are, but the right and the left, one thing they have in common is they overestimate the monetary power here. Because if you look at, this is out of memory, but I think I'm pretty close. The federal government takes in like $1.5 trillion in payroll taxes, which they essentially turn around and pay right out, right? Those are Social Security and those are unemployment and those kinds of things, Medicare. So that's a wash. They take in like $1.7 trillion, which is actually less than the states and munis by far if you add those both together. So they take in $1.7 trillion. We're talking about packages here, Lou, that are twice a year's revenue. And just like in Illinois, people here have no concept of what this pension stuff or what now shutting people down, how that's going to absolutely obliterate the state's revenue capabilities. Federal government's doing the same thing. We're talking this year.
I know. So the question is, why are they doing it? The answer is, it was an election year, and for some unfathomable reason, I'm sorry, it's early here, and I haven't had my, you know, dose of the Stocks and Jocks World Headquarters Breakfast Buffet.
Try and find a place open before 6 down here now. It's part of the pandemic. Yeah.
I mean, the perception, at least my perception of what the Fed is doing, the federal government is doing, is throwing money at the problem and throwing money, trying to come up with a way to throw money at people. But I think the expectation was never that we're going to be able to repay this or that we should. I think the mentality is, we are watching the states react in a completely incompetent manner to this challenge, the virus challenge, and we are, we're in a position where we're gonna print money, we're gonna pump money into the system as fast as we can. We're not doing the kinds of things that I think would really make a difference in terms of individual, and I think of it from an individual perspective, in terms of individual relief. And so I don't think there's an expectation that we're going to be able to do that.
Lou, in the beginning,
I've watched this play out, and I've listened to these numbers, and I'm thinking this is like Monopoly money, and I think that's the way the how the people in Congress and the people in the federal executive look at it.
Well, Lou, I think that when you don't have a whole lot of leadership, when I say combined leadership, it's not like I don't think anybody out there has a brain. I think they do, but you have to. Somebody has to sit down I remember it finally. It was the day before St. Patrick's Day. Last night I was in the Tripoli, and sitting there going, okay, they're going to do this now for essentially 45 days.
Yeah. Originally it was 2 weeks.
Yeah, but I'm saying the federal government came out and said, look, we're going to have a problem and we're going to essentially go out on a limb here and we're going to backstop people for till the end of July, which is really what they did, right? They sent everybody $600 more a week and they gave the PPP stuff to small businesses and they said, we're going to tide people over. We're going to prime the pump. And at the end of the day, we'll make this up somehow. And if things are somewhat back to normal, maybe we can raise some taxes here and there or whatever, and the economy is going halfway decent, we can somehow get back next year into the part where the economy is growing 3% a year, and by the way, our debt's growing 2.8. So if you extend that out, we're okay. And that's the new economics. I don't necessarily agree with that because all it takes is one bad year and that whole philosophy blows. But
I disagree. I don't think that was the thinking. I don't think idea that we were going to try to make up that revenue shortfall was ever in the cards.
Well, what I'm saying is if it was a $3 trillion one-time event, could we get over it? First of all, they really didn't spend the whole $3 trillion. They would say $2 trillion. Could we get over it? is it something that 10 years from now we'd be by? The answer is yeah. But I think so. I think the answer is yes. But if you sit down in a room and say, okay, what if we're wrong? What if we instill so much fear in people? And by the way, the disease doesn't go away, which it hasn't. What if we're still sitting in this room talking about it in December, which we're damn near close to? Well, now we've basically pissed away $3 trillion. The places that we wanted to keep in business are out of business anyway. And the people that we gave the $600 a week to, it helped for a little while, and now they're still heading home to live with Ma and Pa if they have a Ma and Pa. So all we did was basically piss away $3 trillion. I mean, basically. I mean, it helped some people, and some people who didn't deserve it on a conceptual scale, on a legal scale, well, they all deserved it.
I think that was exactly the mindset. But let me tell you something. This, I have yet to see a government, and somebody I'm sure out in listening land can correct me on this, I have yet to see a government start shutting down services in an effort to reduce spending so that they can move towards some kind of a semblance of balancing this thing out. Have you? Has the federal government laid off members of the Equal Opportunity Commission? Employment Opportunity Commission? Has it shut down?
They're all at home getting paid during. They're all at home getting paid doing God knows what.
Has it markedly reduced the size of TSA? Has it shut the bureaucracy down over at Health and Human Services?
Well, Lou, you're not in Chicago anymore, but last night I was watching one of the news shows, and they had evidently in Napertucky. You weren't in Napertucky, were you? You weren't that far.
No.
But in Napertucky, they're thinking about shutting down all like your city services. But people are going to be working from home. So how the hell a librarian works from home? I got nothing against librarians, but I don't know how you do that.
But again, this is part of my thought process with regard, and I operate on a very basic level of economic knowledge, as I have repeatedly demonstrated on this program.
I think you have a better sense of behavioral economics than you think.
Well, I don't think so, but I'm just looking at this. It was pretty funny listening to the mayor of Denver, who I do not respect, start to say, we're going to have a revenue shortfall here, and we're going to have to deal with that. And the wailing and gnashing of teeth, that immediately came up from the usual suspects about, oh my God, this will impact, whatever. There's nobody talking like that. That talk here got shut down real quickly. There's very few people talking like that, and it's going to hit the cities first. And the cities, unlike the states, have the ability to declare bankruptcy, to wipe the debt clean, something I thought Rahm Emanuel should have done in Chicago when he was mayor.
I'm not so sure about that.
But
they have to have permission from the state.
I don't see governments taking the kind of action that I would take if I was somebody looking at a revenue drop like this.
There are still people in the public sector that are convinced the private sector, no matter how bad it is, always has the money. You've got to find the people that have it.
That's exactly right. Well, I mean, Elizabeth Warren made that her campaign thing.
Yeah.
So did Bernie Sanders. That's why they're communists. I get that.
Well, I agree with them in the sense that
nobody's talking.
I agree with them to the extent that everybody should pay their fair share. I mean, and this week I was just listening. In the last couple of days, Walmart, and I think I'm not positive on their tax, so I won't opine on that. Well, their same store sales are up 6.4%. Macy's are down 20, and Amazon, can't wait to take over the world. Does Amazon pay any taxes? I mean, what are we doing with this? I mean, how can they? Somehow or another, how could the place that's doing all the business not be paying taxes? I mean, for God's sake, what are we doing? How does that happen?
Well, again, but I don't think there's the political will to go after this kind of tax revenue to the extent that we're gonna make up, you know, some of this debt that we've incurred. And so I don't think there's an expectation of this stuff being paid. The debt tsunami indicates that at some point, all of this stuff is going to have to be paid back to the people it's owed. Specifically, you know, the company or the country charters. And it's not going to happen. I just don't think it's going to happen. I don't think anybody expects it's going to happen.
Well, Lou, you know that one of my strengths or weaknesses, one wherever you want to put it, I always drop back to the lowest common denominator. All right, so you've got a tax rate, you know, pick a number. It's pushing 35% from the federal government, right? And it's another, say 5 for the state, or is it 4, all it is? And you've got all your other stuff, your fees and whatever. So when I was a Ute, not quite a Ute, but when I was in college, there was a group, and they probably still around, I don't know if you remember these guys. They would calculate every year, I don't think they did it for every state, they would calculate every year how long you had to work in a year to pay off your taxes. And I'm thinking in those days, it was like mid to late April.
That's the number I remember.
Yeah, well, that's because you're not young anymore, neither am I. But I think that number got to May, and I think it got to June. And I think, you know, unless you can hide some stuff in capital gains and things like that, I think you're pushing, you could be pushing August in some of these states. Which, you know, and in my first tax class was Professor Dinkolo, the Dink, of course. Dink was this huge man who played football for God knows who, but the guy had massive, he was wearing a size 58 coat back when they even make those things, Louie. That's how big the guy was. And he wasn't fat. He was just a huge man. And he'd say, students, no matter what you do around the world, you look around in Italy, they have a rate of like 50% and everybody pays off the tax guy, you end up with revenues of 25. Somewhere else, they do it this way and everybody cheats, or they have so many deductibles, you get down to 25%. He says, you end up getting 25, you know, maybe 30% out of your people. I mean, that's pretty much it. Or else people either go to a barter system, they do something, we actually think here that somehow or another, these people on the left, more so, well, first of all, the people on the right think that they should be able to pay nothing if they got the right lawyer. Then the people on the left think that you should be able to get like 60-70% out of somebody. I mean, Lou, I don't think that happens. I mean, there's going to be some pushback there. There's going to be, you know, of course they're trying to find a way to use the COVID to get rid of cash, because they know all they'll do is have everybody paying people in cash, and then they don't want that. You know, if you're, I mean, nobody even really thinks about it. But the minimum now is down to $600, and if you're want to deduct something from somebody for 1099, so if you paid some poor bastard $600 to like clean up the paper around your building or something just because you like the guy, and you gave him $600, you have to give the guy a 1099, and even if that's all he made all year, he's supposed to send the government $90. 15% is his payroll taxes. And we have buffoons on TV that say we have to widen, you know, we have to widen the net or something. These guys should pay income tax. Lou, who the hell makes $600 a year at the end of the year has $90 to send in a check to the Fed? I mean, who are we kidding?
Like I said, I this is not a, this is a, this debt that we're incurring right now is a vote buying exercise, and that's all it is.
Yeah, but the message is it's a limitless.
I don't expect there's going to be repayment.
But the message is it's a limitless larder, and it's not. That anyway, we got to dash off the break here. S&P futures down 375. NASDAQ futures down 3250. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI ProDirect can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI ProDirect. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you're aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we've always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello, welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Just my Weber on the board. Mr. Lou Michaels with us as well, as we do every Thursday. S&P futures down 2.25. We're down a lot more earlier. We had a sell-off yesterday afternoon. It was pretty heavy, but we started last night like flat, and we went down. Now we're coming back here. NASDAQ futures down 29. Dow futures down 57. We're in Europe. We got the DAX down 116. That's 0.9%. FTSE down 46.7%. CAC around down 40.7. We're in Asia. We've got the Nikkei down 93. They were down more than that last night. That's 0.3%. Shanghai down 15. I'm sorry, up 15.4%. They're the only place that's up. Hang Seng down 187. It's 0.7%. Way of review yesterday, Dow was down 344. It's over percent. That's 1.1%. S&P futures down 41.79. Exactly 1.1%, just like the Dow. NASDAQ was down 97.8%. Bonds, 0.86, down 2 basis points. Bund, minus 0.56. Japan, positive 0.01. Eakin back toward dead zero line. Got oil down 32 cents, 41.50. Brent down 14 cents, 44.20. Natural gas down 7 cents, 2.63. That's a big move down from the 301 they were a couple weeks ago. So, wow, if you'd have shorted it there, you'd have done all right. That's a huge contract. No, I did not do that, nor would I recommend it because the contract's so big, but it would have been a winner, as they say. RBOB, 115. We got gold down 18.60. Silver down 41 cents, 24.03. Copper down, copper unchanged at 3.18. Maddie, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
34 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. We're off to a good start on the area expressways, roadways, and tollways. Looks like one accident in the area right now. That's on the Kennedy westbound at East River Road, and that's our only area of concern. No issues on the Edens. Eisenhower looks good, as does the Stevenson. Southside expressways are all quiet. We have one other notification in the area, Chief, and that's apparently there's some malfunctioning crossing gates at Harlem Avenue before Burlington. First Avenue and Cicero are alternate routes there. But that's the only other issue in the area. Weather today, it's going to be very windy with gusts in the 20 to 30 mile per hour range, could touch 40 miles per hour at some moments, but will be warm. Cloudy skies with a high of 64. Right now it is partly cloudy and 48 degrees downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 58. In sports, the NBA draft was last night, and the Bulls had the number 4 pick. Of course, everyone was saying it was a 3-man draft, so of course that's the year the Bulls would have the number 1 pick. The number 4, I should say. They took Patrick Williams, small forward out of Florida State, with the number 4 pick. Number 1 overall went to the Timberwolves. That was Anthony Edwards. Warriors took James Wiseman at number 2, and the Hornets took LaMelo Ball at number 3. The Suns had the 10 pick. They took Jalen Smith. Quickly in the second round, the Bulls had the number 44 overall pick, and they took Marco Simonovic, I believe is how you say his name. He is a mobile big man, they're saying, from Montenegro, Chief, and that was the Bulls' second round pick.
Where did the guy go who the Bulls were allegedly supposed to take from Europe?
There was some buzz about a guy named Denny Avdija.
Yeah, that's a guy.
He dropped all the way to number 9. And so he went to the Wizards. I don't know why he dropped, because there was a lot of buzz about him. But the quick write-up on him says he is thought to be the greatest basketball talent that Israel has ever had and likely will be the highest-ranked European player in this year's draft. That was heading into it. He is a 6'9 small forward, but he dropped all the way down to number 9.
Sounds like there might have been a trade there. Give him the number 4. Drop down, get a second round pick.
I think the Bulls didn't like him. Otherwise,
okay.
I think the Bulls with their new executive team being big on European players, I think if they liked him, they would have taken him. So,
so the guy they got, is he any good?
Well, it depends on what you read. So he was kind of a sixth man in college.
How could the fourth player in the country suck?
Well, I don't think he sucks. I think he's a high upside guy. But you know, in a 3-man draft, if you're drafted number 4, that's probably the best bet, is to take the guy that has the biggest ceiling. You know, does that mean it's going to pan out? Of course not. But he's 6'8", 19 years old, very athletic, very valuable player at Florida State the 1 year he was there. But he was young, and that team was loaded. They were a top 5 team, and he came off the bench, and he only averaged like 9.5 points per game. And so that's concerning when your guy didn't even average double figures in college. But
you can't start for the college team. How's he going to start for your team?
Right. But, you know, I also know that sometimes it just because you're the sixth man doesn't mean you can't start. It just means for that team, they like you coming off the bench and being a spark. He still played like starter minutes, I think. But still, there's a lot of question marks, you know, with this pick. But again, if it's a 3-man draft and you're drafting number 4, you're trying to take the best upside guy you can have.
I guess. The draft did not have a Wilt, did not have a Jabbar, did not have a Akeem, did not have a Michael Jordan.
This draft is considered on paper to be a weaker draft, yes. As opposed to, you know, some recent drafts, and certainly some of the drafts you're alluding to back in the 80s. But,
The kids come out so early, it's hard to get a finished product.
It is, and you know, I think James Wiseman, the guy the Warriors got, is going to be a really, really valuable player. He's just so athletic, 7-footer, and you put him on that team with all those shooters and just let him run rim to rim and protect the rim, and you don't ask him to do anything except rebound and block shots and catch alley-oops. I think he's going to be a beast for the Warriors.
The
fact that they get a number 2 pick when they have all that talent, because you know, they essentially tanked this last year with all the injuries they had you know, Kevin Durant leaving and Klay Thompson with the torn ACL, and Steph Curry was out for a big part of the season. And so it's kind of like what the Spurs did when David Robinson was out, and then they got Tim Duncan with the number 1 pick, even though they were really good with Robinson, then they won the title with Duncan and Robinson.
That's wild.
I think we're going to see that with the Warriors.
Hey, Lou, here's one from the past in football, not that you remember this. I was doing some thing about Paul Hornung the other day, because he was one of the most interesting characters that ever, certainly ever walked in the South Bend campus. They used to have, for those that don't remember, Matt, you never saw, there was none in your lifetime, the college All-Star games, were there? When did those things end? Lou, when did those
end? Didn't those end sometime in the early 70s?
Early 70s, was maybe even the late 60s, but for those that don't remember, they used to have
my father played in one.
Yeah, well, I mean, guys, but did they ever? They took all the the best college players, and they put them in a camp. It was after the draft, and then they would play the team that won the NFL the year before. And usually, no matter how good the college kids were, they basically got their ass kicked. But in the 57 college all-star game in Chicago, guess who was on this team? They had Paul Hornung, Hall of Famer, Jim Brown, Jim Parker, obviously one of the best linemen that ever played, John Brody, John Arnett, Len Dawson, Tommy McDonald. Curly Lambeau and Otto Graber were their coaches. They still got their ass kicked 22-7 to the New York Giants. This goes to show
that, right?
Yeah. Well, the New York Giants had a serious team. They had Big Daddy Limscombe. They had all those guys on that team, right? That was a team that the one year of supposedly the world, the NFL's greatest game when Johnny Unitas beat them and it was one of the biggest upsets. Was that 1958?
Yes, it was.
Because, I mean,
the first overtime game.
But man for man, I mean, the Giants were way better than the Colts, but Johnny U was that good. Anyway, we went down kind of memory.
So I want, let me, since we're on the sports segment of the hour, let me ask you guys, what's going to happen to Theo Epstein? Where do you think he ends up?
That's a good question. Manny and I had a long conversation.
Do you think he stays in baseball, or does he go to something else?
Well, he could possibly go to football. I mean, I don't know. Is hockey big enough? Or basketball?
No.
I don't think so.
No, and I don't see him. I don't see him going to the NFL. Maybe as a glamour hire, but I don't see him being effective there. Do you think he stays in baseball? Do you think he goes into politics? Do you think?
Manny was talking. He's teaching a new producer today, whatever. So he's probably not listening. But he was thinking of maybe part of an ownership group.
Well, certainly if an ownership group was forming for a team in Nashville, I understand that's a potential target area for Major League Baseball. An ownership group forming for a new team, he would be somebody you would, if you could get him on, he would be somebody you would want immediately. He would, you know, drive up the value of the franchise just by coming in because of the potential success. I think given the uncertainty with the public response or political response to the virus, I think he stays out for a year and looks around, assesses his options, but I think he heads into government somewhere. I think some government entity grabs a hold of him at the federal level, especially in this whatever if Biden ultimately prevails, and we see him falter in public service.
Well, I don't know where that all lands. I just at some point, Lou, I look at this coronavirus thing, and I've never once downplayed the severity of this thing, especially if people get it if they have something else wrong with them. I mean, as Audrey has an Asian doctor, and he said, you know, one of the problems with this is that people have no idea how dangerous a normal cold and flu season is for people that are co-opted.
Exactly.
And I guess, and this is going to be worse, but people are going to look like it's never happened before.
Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because again, that was one of my topics of conversation. The what I consider to be the incredibly incompetent, and I think the response here has been incompetent. The incredibly incompetent response by a number of states and local officials. So we know now, we have a pretty good handle on the excess deaths as a result of lockdown policies and deferred, you know, things like deferred medical treatment.
We know, but you'll never hear it. You'll never hear
pardon
it.
Pardon me?
We no, may know, but you'll never hear it.
But that's what I mean. So, yeah. So that's what I'm talking about. I'm saying that we have a pretty good handle, a reasonable handle, on excess deaths as a result of the lockdown policies. And the assumption was, or the understanding is, that the virus is not killing as many people as the lockdown policies are. And that's been true sometime in mid-May.
Yes, and it's getting more that way.
So we know that. If you're a public policy person, you look at this and go, all right, the cost-benefit analysis of continuing this, these policies, is now moving away from virus policies and needs to move toward our economic policy that's killing more people. Notwithstanding that, we go back to the same playbook again on this second round, rather than saying, okay, we now have some benchmarks. We know that who the people in danger are. We can either give them, enough knowledge so that they can start making reasonable decisions about whether they should be out and wearing masks and doing all this other stuff. But we let the rest of the economy come back. We tell people, you can go sit in restaurants, you can go to sporting events, you can go to gyms, you can go to, you could sit in your offices without having to wear a mask, and we're going to allow that and deal with, take protective measures against the vulnerable. And we're going to come up with some creative ways to do that. Or we can just shut down everything. And the option of shutting down everything is I just don't understand it. I don't understand why there has been no move to selectively protect the elderly, the compromised.
Well, we don't want to be.
There has not been the kind of public education campaign going out to those people to say, you should be staying home if you fall into these categories. And, I don't get it. And it's incredibly damaging. And there's been no public discussion of, here are the costs of the lockdown. Cuomo in New York just basically skates away from the fact that his policy back in March was responsible for the death of as many as 30,000 people. And the reason that New York had the big spike was because of his policy with respect to nursing homes.
Well,
there's no accountability for that. And there's no accountability for this failure, in my mind, to do something that appears to be really obvious,
Lou,
which
is
not screw everybody.
It's right now, but if you look at, I'm not a fan of Jay Pritzker, but one day I did listen to one of his news conferences. The pressure from the media and from the public employees' unions is something these guys cannot withstand. They don't have the stones to withstand it.
But again, this goes back to, and this goes back to the point we were making earlier. I don't see government doing what it needs to do with respect to excess costs.
Look, if we have
people that aren't working, and we're closing down government operations, then we stop paying them.
That would start to
manage your public employee union expectations.
At some point, somebody somewhere, and who that somebody is, we got to drag Solomon out and clone him or something. We can find the body. Somebody has to say, and after that date, it's not like not one person is going to get the COVID. So somebody has to stand up and say, you know what? For whatever reason, you fools put me in charge, but since I'm in charge, I'm going to act like I am. We're going back to school. We're going back to this. We're going back to that. And I will never force a teacher to go to work if they feel they're unsafe. But if you don't go, we're finding somebody else.
Yeah, you're fired.
You're on unpaid leave until whatever, something.
There's an interesting case here in Denver, in which two public defenders have said they are not showing up to conduct a jury trial in Denver courts. And the judge said, you're going to show up because these trials are going forward. That we can manage the risk. We can assemble a jury pool. We've got mechanisms in place to try to protect people. And we're going to deal with what we've got. And these public defenders are saying, we're not showing up. And the judge said, okay, fine, contempt of court. He's threatening them with contempt. Now, I haven't seen the final resolution, but, my immediate reaction was, if you're not going to play ball with us,
I'm going to say that those judges,
about your health concerns.
In the court of public opinion, those judges are end up being vilified.
Well, the press might jump on them.
Yeah.
But again, why is the press driving a public policy here?
Oh, they are.
I think this is a function of the politicization of the virus back in the spring as a way to get Trump.
The governor in Zimbabwe closed everything down in an effort to save lives. You're not doing it. You don't care about lives. Come on, Lou, I can write this stuff.
Well, I know. And that's why I say there's been nobody standing up and saying, here are the costs. Here's the cost of the shutdown. We're actually killing more people with the shutdown than we are with the virus.
But right now,
let's start acting like rational people and say, okay, we got to change the shutdown rules. Moreover, and this is something that again I throw my hands up and say, what are we doing? This stuff, the masking policy. By the way, there's a study out of Denmark now, a massive one, that basically says the masks don't make any difference.
No.
There's a masking policy in place. We shut down the economy. We're working on that, and it's not working. So you know what? We're going to do more of it. Instead of, again, the kind of thoughtful, let's look at where the numbers are, let's look at where the problems are, and let's look at who the problems are affecting. So basically, you know, instead of saying, okay, if you're over the age of 65, if you want to go into a gymnasium to work out, here are the requirements you're going to have to meet.
But I don't like the idea of the people making these. Freedom is not a compromise. I mean, at some point, I don't want to deal with Lori Lightfoot's doctor, who maybe is there because she couldn't get another job, or maybe she's really smart. I don't know. I want to open up my health club. Okay, but you gotta wear masks. Well, no, I don't want to do that. You gotta be, I don't want to have this debate with them, because in their mind, the idea of it being open is a right now that she gives me.
I know.
I don't want to go there. I mean, I don't want to, but then you find, God, I don't want to make some Nazi reference here, so I won't. But you'll find people are more willing. Please let me open my restaurant. I'll make people wear masks. I'll make people sit 10 feet apart. People are dying to just get the door open. They're willing to give up any freedom to these people.
Let me take this back one step further. And we talked about this months ago. On what basis, if I go into a restaurant and I catch something from somebody in the restaurant, what's my basis of suing the restaurant? I mean,
people are terrified downtown.
If I go to a football stadium and I catch a cold, or I catch the mumps or measles or something from somebody, do I get to sue the stadium?
The answer obviously now is yes, because everybody's going to be all over that.
I don't think so. I think given
your ramps did not allow 6 foot of difference. You can run this before a jury. I mean, who knows?
But see, again, there'd be no way of proving it. I think by a preponderance of evidence that this is where you got it. But you know, we don't allow, if you catch some disease at a public forum, we do not allow, our liability law does not allow you to reach out and sue that entity because somebody else was in there and you weren't checking for it. This was something we talked about months ago, and I said, look, if we're really serious about this, the first thing we do is we pass statutes that immunize public forums from lawsuits by people who, quote, allegedly got sick, unquote, in their facility. But again, none of this stuff that was maybe reasonably prudent and not particularly, you have to be particularly bright to pick it up, none of this stuff has been done.
Well, we could have had, with all the people that are testing positive and heavy antibodies, from what I understand, a pint of blood gets you enough plasma for 4 people. We could have been giving that plasma to people in nursing homes now for 6 months. But we, somehow or another, were locked into these major pharmaceuticals. We have about 5 minutes, but I want to ask you, and, you know, just tell me off the top of your head, don't, because you've been involved in these kind of, you're more Washington friendly than you say, and so forth. But I'm curious exactly why Pfizer and Moderna didn't say what they said a week earlier. And I'm also curious as to why the Federal Reserve poured something like $300 to $500 billion into the market the day before the election. Now, that is, I don't think that favored either side in this, but it just basically, no matter.
Oh, who, I think the vaccine.
No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about
would have favored Trump.
Yes, but I'm talking about the Fed. I'm going to say they did that the night before the election. They just did that as a gift to whoever won. The market thinks it's good, or something along those lines. I mean, which is clearly not their job. But let's say, for instance, that the vaccine could have been done a week earlier. You know, probably could have. I mean, I that's my guess. Now, what is the quid pro quo? I mean, how does this message get delivered? Yesterday I said, you know, remember in Major League, the guy threw his contract on the ground and essentially peed on it, right? That was never said a word, but he got his message across. Is it a lobbyist from Pfizer going to the Biden camp and Biden's guy saying, we have no intention of doing anything with prescription drug prices in our entire first term? I mean, our plate is full. Is it something like that?
I doubt if it's that explicit.
Well, that's what I mean. I guarantee you
that there were executives in the Pfizer organization and the Moderna organization that were either big donors to the Democrats or friendly to the Democrats that picked the phone up sometime in September and said to the Biden, somebody in the Biden camp, and this would have been done at a very high level, hey, this thing has actually got some legs and it looks like it's going to work, but I don't want Trump to get credit for it because it will help his election chances. So let's talk about, you know, you let us know how you think this should be released and when, and we'll coordinate with you on that.
See, I had this conversation with your right-wing compadre, John Flanagan, and I'm going to kind of push back on you as much as I did on him. I don't think this guy is not even from the U.S. He's the head of Pfizer. And I go back to my read, which I never should have done because all it does poison my head. I read The Sovereign State of ITT and all about Harold Janine. I don't think for a second that the people at Pfizer, which are now overseas company because they moved there, even though their headquarters are in New York, I don't think for a second that they have any, could care less who's president or which party gets in. It's all about them. And if they think for a second that Biden will be a little, well, because they didn't do anything against drug prices in the entire 8 years Obama was in. So, and then Trump is, you never know what Trump's liable to do. He's liable to actually do it.
Trump did some stuff on drug prices.
Nothing like he said he was going to, but nobody, it seems to be a sacred cow. But the fact is, I don't think if Trump were to make the deal with them 2 weeks before, I think they're non-denominational. They're the Green Party.
It would not surprise me one bit if there were U.S. executives that were coordinating this, and you know, the foreign side of Pfizer or the foreign side of Moderna looked around and had some of its senior executive people from the U.S. going to them and saying, look, this is a U.S. political issue, and we will score big with the Biden people, who, by the way, look like they're going to run away with this election. Remember what the poll said?
Yeah.
We would score big with these Biden people if we hung this news up for a week.
Okay, but what do they, we only have a minute here, Louis, what do they expect to get? They expect them to drag their feet on drug pricing, they expect them to give them another, they already lost Lipitor and Viagra to generic.
Nothing that specific, they expect access, Chief. That's what they want. They want access.
Right, but they don't, because I mean right now, there's people that, I mean, every year now, people on Social Security get a 1% raise.
There's no trade-off. There's no, you know, you protect this and I'll do, or we'll give you this in exchange for this specific thing.
All right, so there is no quid pro quo. It's an attitude. All right.
It's, yeah. it's we'll do this and you'll keep the door open.
Well, you look, I mean, all the different, well, you and I could talk for a month on everything you pick, the hypocrisy of it. People on Social Security's got a 1.3% raise. Every year prescription drugs go up, and now it's 5.3%. That doesn't even count. So if you string that out 20 years, the entire Social Security check for most people is going to be going for drugs, right, if you do the math?
A lot of it, yes. Or for health care.
Yeah. All right, Luke, thank you very much, bud. Take care of yourself. S&P Futures now down 5. We're dipping a little bit here. NASDAQ Futures down 20. Be right back. Stocks and Jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices, along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com. PTIProDirect.com.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Something happening here.
Lowell North Bay, Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen, just from my member of the board. SP Futures down 7 now. They were limping along down 2, and now we just dropped 5 just that quickly. Down 22 on the NASDAQ, and we're down like 45 on the Dow. And the individual stocks on the Dow, we got Boeing down 2. It was up a bunch yesterday as the 737 MAX is, I guess, cleared to fly, but all the details of how the hell you're going to get it in the air and the training and the simulators, and I don't know how, we'll, as time goes by, we'll learn how close that is to all be taken care of. Dan, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Hanging in there, bud. It's a nice Thursday, and it's going to be warm, but like so windy, it'll take your hat and throw it down the block here today, so probably not so great. How are things in Florida?
They're great. We're finally having some cooler weather, so we like that.
No hurricane, no alligator in your pool, nothing like that?
All that's behind us now, I think. I think we're into the good weather season now.
Well, good for you. What do you make of, since last week, God, what has happened? Big rallies, all of a sudden we're selling off a little bit. I mean, I don't know if you were catching quite in the show the other day where I somehow stumbled on this massive injection of funds by the Federal Reserve the day before the election.
Right.
Which is pretty spectacular, but now it appears to be wearing off a little bit, or for lack of a better term, it's like they put money in. I am getting this feeling that it's, every dollar they put in now is gives them a little less than the dollar they just put in. Did you happen to catch, before we start talking about specific stuff, that the story about the attack of the debt tsunami? Did you read this thing this morning?
No, I didn't.
It's the IIF, International Something-Something Fund. Global debt will break new records in the coming month to reach $277 trillion. That's a number by the end of the year. among advanced nations, debt surged above 432% of GDP in the third quarter, a 50 percentage point increase from 2019. Emerging market markets' debt levels rose over 248% of GDP. Lebanon, China, Malaysia, and Turkey experiencing the biggest rates in non-financial sector debt. So they're basically saying the world's swimming in debt, which I think you and I probably knew. I didn't realize these numbers are this big.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, I had no idea they were that big, but you probably did.
Yeah, I missed that, but I've seen similar discussions basically with the same theme, and the debt levels on the household side are very, very high. I mean, that's obvious as what that we're seeing that with a lot of the economic ramifications of people having too much debt on their balance sheet personally at the household level, causing problems then with being able to pay rent and all that, not really having any buffer, if you will. And then on the corporate side, we're seeing a lot more issuance. The liquidity that came to the system really spurred that, and their demand for yield has spurred it as well. So what's happening is we're at that stage in the cycle, which always happens with high yield, is people are going down in credit quality to get the extra yield, and at the same time, it's easier for issuers to issue debt at decent rates. So that has become a global situation, and people are looking wherever they can for yield at this point. So and it is a double whammy. It has huge ramifications that could be very negative, as we've seen in other periods of time, late 80s, late 90s, 08. So we have to be careful about that. Where we still have demand, there's going to be supply, if that makes sense. So we're, as long as there is this pent-up demand and there's people pushing for yield or looking for yield, there's going to be supply. And so that could create a really serious problem if we see, global downturn in the economy, but I'm not sure that that's going to happen or that that's going to be the reason it happens. Really what I think people are focused on in the markets over the next 6 months are, getting a vaccine and getting it actually administered and seeing that be a big impetus or big catalyst to global demand remaining strong. And even in certain sectors like the energy sector, we're seeing surprisingly strong demand. So the debt issue has been an issue, and it creeps up over more than 10 years into this business cycle, and it creeps up and it is going to be an issue. I think it's going to be an issue for the new administration coming in. However, I think the bigger short term issue that the markets are focused on is the vaccine, and is getting that out, and I think people are looking more.
Did you take our poll? Did you take our poll yesterday?
I'm sorry.
Did you take our poll yesterday? Did you participate in our survey?
I didn't.
Would you rather be the first person to take the vaccine or the first person to walk on a 737X?
I don't know. Can I opt out? Actually, probably the plane, to be honest with you.
I had a few people say the plane, yeah. Hey, I have a question for you. This might be, it's totally off the wall, but, I've been concerned for a while. One of the reasons why I do the show, Dan, or we do the show, is trying to get some semblance of some kind of facts and truth out there. I mean, I know it's a small,
yes,
it's a small splash in a big ocean, but we're doing what we can. For a long time, all I would read about was this dollar-denominated Chinese debt and how it was the canary in the coal mine, because even the Chinese government said there's too much debt going out there. We're not running it. I think this is what happened. We're not running it through the normal system, where the normal system is that if you wanted to buy paper from China, if you wanted to lend money to people in China, buy paper, same thing, that you would have to take the dollar, turning into the yuan, which was very hard to do, and it was very restricted, then that then you would buy the debt that way, where the government could essentially, for lack of a better term, keep track of it. And I think they said at one point, hey, you know what, just go out directly to people and just, not just dollar, but it's but dollar and euro dollar debt. You go out and just lend money to people who have dollars and euros, you know, just go right to them. And for, and I think that even a couple of years ago, even before the vaccine, when China, when, you know, Trump and China are fighting, I'm not saying that was the cause, that debt appeared to be pretty damn wobbly. And there was a lot of, people not paying the interest, and it's all I read about. And all of a sudden, we get worse and worse on the world stage, and I can't find boo about that. I mean, do you have any idea what's going on there? Or are they just hushing it up, or is everybody paying? I mean, what's going on? Do you have any idea?
It's not an area that I follow that closely. It's actually an area that I kind of stay away from. I think I'd rather get on that the new 737.
Yeah, yeah.
And part of the reason is that it's not a developed market in China. It's the debt markets are not developed the way they are in the U.S. And there's also, you know, there are certain regulatory issues that make it difficult for us to have access to, you know, for a guy like me that's going to be doing analysis on what I'm purchasing, to get a bigger picture. So I don't see it as, you know, I think it was a way to, again, to stretch for yield and to maybe, you know, get some of the benefits of an economy that was improving and an economy that's doing well. But I think there are other ways of getting that, and I would much rather own the equity if I was going to go into the Asian markets. But that's not really our area of focus. That is also, you know, the other place where that happened is, you know, obviously in Europe, and then in some of the countries that were high, you know, had highly leveraged debt, and it was the same type of phenomenon in terms of not really, you know, there was the currency translation, and then there was the issue of accessibility, liquidity. Right now it looks like we're in this incredibly liquid environment, but I'm not sure if that changes whether I'd want to be owning Chinese debt.
Well, Dan, what no, it seems to me
transparency is so important in you know, the way we invest. Transparency is essential, and that would be probably my biggest concern.
Well, it seems to me, and correct me if I'm wrong, that your strength and the strength of a lot of the people in your firm is, okay, all this debt's out there, a lot of it's not worth anything, and there's all these different numbers on it. There's 4% stuff, 5 or 6. What we're going to do is we're going to find somebody paying 6, but we're going to find a company that actually is going to pay the 6 and actually is a good place. And that's what you guys do from what I've gathered. And I think, my question is, what would you do? What if you were in Europe and the standard rate was minus 0.5? What is the Dan Janitas of a Frankfurt doing all day? I mean, there's got to be. What, you have any idea?
Yeah. So you'd be looking for the same type of investments. You know, for your clients, you'd be looking for higher yield. You'd be looking more in the corporate space. You know, if you're in Germany, I actually did work for Baring Asset Management many years ago and spent a lot of time in Germany and had a number of German clients, and you're in a, there's going to be a you know, an investment that makes a little more sense to me, but you're going to be stretching for yield. What has happened though to a lot of those you know, European investors, including German investors, is coming over here still, because we have negative, you know, our negative rates aren't as negative as theirs. At this point, and I'm not sure if they're going to get any worse, but they're looking for quality. So we're still viewed as the quality play, whether it be in the treasury market or in the corporate market. So I would be looking, if I was a German investor, I would be looking for quality. You know, I might be looking for multinationals, but I'd be looking for where their revenues are coming from and, you know, where their cash flow is coming from. And I don't know that I would go into the local market and, you know, stretch for yield there, because that market's going to be a little bit, that's going to be a tougher market, although Germany itself probably would be one of the better countries in Europe if you had to do that.
What do you find
but it
here?
Is a challenge right, yeah, it's a challenge right now. I mean, what we do, you know, right now, actually today, for example, there's a conference, and I'll be meeting with half a dozen senior management teams. You know, a couple of them are teams that I've talked about that we keep in touch with, and we talk to pretty much monthly. And one of the names that's coming up that I think is a good play right now, you know, I've talked about Blue Knight. It's an asphalt storage business, and it's a business that also has done some crude oil storage, and it's done transportation, pipeline transport, but their main business is asphalt storage, and infrastructure is still the way to go. I really believe that's the future. Technology is as well, but I think infrastructure, there's still better opportunities in infrastructure. Building out infrastructure, technological infrastructure is also really going to be very important in the next few years, in the next few decades. So these names and being in these names early on and looking for yield, and again, Blue Knight has the preferred that's paying over 10%. Dividend yield is over 10%. Solid company. Already they own these facilities. Good cash flow business, very predictable cash flow business, and a company that's focused on their cash flow. And by the way, the preferred was off for the first time in weeks by about 2% yesterday. So today I'd be in there buying BKEPP. So again, going back to the theme of where do you find yield, you know, where do you find value? For us, we really want to know the companies we're invested in. So when we have these one-on-one meetings, we have an opportunity to get all our questions answered. We get a perspective from management about what's going on in their space. They're, you know, privy to a lot more information, and we find that to be, you know, rather than just reading the news or trying to come up with our own judgment based on different economic variables, that's sort of where it's real for us, you know, hearing, talking directly to the people running these companies, understanding the challenges that they have, and also, you know, understanding the opportunities that they have. So Blue Knight is a good example. I had mentioned another name, you know, last week, Thunderbird. Thunderbird now is trading over the counter in the U.S., and it's THBRF. And that is another company that's just very well managed, very well positioned. They're in the right industry, being in a media business. They have good content. They've taken talent from a lot of the top, you know, from Disney and Pixar and from a lot of the Lionsgate. And they're, I'm going to be meeting with them again this afternoon. And these are companies that we look at, we develop a relationship with, and we see a relationship going forward with these companies as they grow. So we get to know them very well. We get to understand their dynamic of their industry. We're, you know, this frequent communication. And that gives us a leg up. It makes it easier to sleep knowing the management team, knowing that, you know, having that relationship. But at least in the case of Blue Knight, there's a place if you're looking for some yield. I had mentioned a couple of other names, Chicken Soup for the Soul.
Dan, when is it? Is that thing callable?
Also yielding over 10%.
Is that preferred callable, or is it forever?
Those are, one of them is a mandatory, and it's basically means that they're callable in 21. So basically, you know, end of 21, December of 21. So you know, it is like buying a short-term bond, but getting a really fat yield on it. And they're trading at a discount to the conversion rate. You know, so it's it's a pretty good place to be. And I think also these are good industries to be in.
Well, you assume they're going to.
Importantly, because
you assume these guys are going to call.
You know, where do we go right now? You know, where you want to be, and tech seems overvalued, and there's potentially a lot more regulatory issues that are going on, and you know, that's going to be a very volatile area. But where can you look? And here are two examples: infrastructure play and a media play that I think are, or a couple of media plays that I think are,
Dan, can
good, solid, long term, you know, good yielding investments.
I guess I should know this from my finance one of these days or years ago. Can a firm go out and if this thing dips the convertible, even though can they go out and buy some in the open market today if they want, the firm?
Absolutely.
Well, they can.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, Blue Knight is planning on doing that. So they're, you know, that's the nice thing about talking directly to management is it's public information. But you know, they'll tell me in a call. I've asked that question. They're saying, sure. You know, if it's trading at a discount and it's, you know.
But are the media requirements? Do you have to pass at a board meeting if we want to, we can buy X numbers of shares back and get that out to the shareholders. I mean, are the notifications the same for preferred as they are for common?
They are, and the nice thing about these companies I'm talking about is they are small and microcap. So the you know, in terms of getting decisions made quickly, these companies have really solid management teams, and that's part of the process that we go through when we analyze management. And you know, will they be able to make decisions quickly and be nimble enough to you know, look at opportunities like buying back their stock or the preferred stock? But yes, they can do that. It's some, you know, preferreds all have, you know, they're more like bonds in the sense that they have indentures that will tell you what you're allowed to do. So each of them are going to be structured a little bit differently, but generally there are no requirements, or there no, you know, there's no exclusion to buying back preferreds.
What
the same is true with most bonds.
Okay.
When bonds are trading at a discount, they can be bought back.
Without any,
certainly you like companies who are doing both.
Well, you like
you
companies
want to invest in those names where they're doing both, where they're cash flow conscious and their balance sheet conscious, and yeah. But again, this is an environment that we're in. You know, we're reaching new highs in Dow, S&P, Nasdaq. We're reaching new lows if you think of yields around the world, and looking for opportunities that are still going to be stable and give you some decent yield and decent return and decent protection, I think, is really important. I still have more optimistic view in that I think that the vaccine coming, you know, and I think in the next 6 months is going to be a very positive thing. We're going to have volatility, a lot of volatility between now and then. And I think that volatility would be there no matter what, because as we, you know, traditionally as we reach new highs in the market, there's that, you know, there's that fear of missing out, but then there's also that at some point investors are stepping back and saying, okay, you know, can this be sustainable with the level of debt we have globally? Can this be sustainable with you know, a number of the, you know, new administration with some regulatory issues that may be coming up, with some higher taxes that could be coming? So there is a natural level of volatility or a natural level of correction that is, I think, that we're going to see in the near term as well. So balancing those two, trying to avoid the noise in the middle, and, you know, I said looking for some of these names that are I think going to be consistent and good investments. So, you know,
well, you end up looking at things and sometimes taking an overall view, which doesn't do you any good, is you sit there and say, really, now the Fed, because of the COVID and other things and the shutdown early in the year, we went down. They don't want to let the money supply drop dramatically, as happened in the Depression. And even though I don't think they really could have made any difference in the Depression, even though every economist said they could have, I think it's all BS, to be honest with you. But I've done some reading about this, and I come to different conclusions than other people. Dan, I guess it's just me always coming to different conclusions. But just the idea of pumping things to the point where, does the market really deserve to be higher than it was than before anybody even knew what COVID was? You ask yourself, wow, is that a natural thing? I don't know. It could be that things are getting more concentrated, that the top 100 companies actually did pretty well in this due to preference and due to governmental stuff. And maybe we're just getting more concentrated. Clearly Amazon's better off. I mean, Microsoft's better off.
Sure.
But is that healthy in the long run? You know, I don't know. I don't know how you quantify that. My instincts tell me the answer is no. But is how unhealthy? Should I short one of those things today? I don't think I can do that. You know, I would certainly recommend that. But, you know, where are we here? I mean, and you have to ask yourself, you know, I'm asking you.
I think it's a good question. And I would say I share your view. Like pre-COVID, we were starting to think that we're you know, at the mature stage in the cycle, you know, across the board. And even though you can still find opportunities, we were already there,
yeah,
you know, back in the early part of this year. So it's very unlikely that, you know, we have a huge amount of upside during a period where we still have some workout to go through here that seems to not be getting a lot of the press. You know, you're seeing some of what's going on the local level, but you're not seeing as much of what's going on the, you know, on the level of, you know, some of the bankruptcies that are you know, the larger number of bankruptcies that we're seeing. And we are seeing some of, like I said, household debt. When you were talking about, you know, the increase in debt level globally, that's certainly going to have continued consequences. And I think that's going to be an issue that the new administration will be dealing with. And yeah, that's going to be challenging.
Well, Dan,
in terms of the markets, I think we've got good news ahead, you know, to look forward to and, you know, trying to, you know, keep your head down, I think, in this environment and not get too caught up in that. But, we tend to be a little more conservative. That's our style. And it's done, you know, we've done well by it over time. So, we're just going to stick with our style. We're not really, you know, we're not changing anything here.
Dan, what's the, here's a question for you, and only maybe you could answer this. You look at some of the numbers that people have gone out and borrowed at. Was it Amazon or Microsoft went out and got like 2% 30-year rates or 2.3 or some ridiculous number. And yet here you found a pretty nice company in this Blue Knight, and they're paying 10% on a preferred. Now, what level aren't they at that they would need to be at to walk into J.P. Morgan tomorrow and say, I want to borrow 5 years for 3% and I'll pay all these idiots off with these preferreds at 10. I mean, they obviously can't do it or they would have. What's the level at which you become this preferred person and the world is your oyster? I mean, obviously you'd want to be there.
Yeah, no, it's market cap. And these are micro cap names that don't have that luxury. So it's, you know, they're focused on paying down the preferred, so that, you know, once they get past paying this preferred off, then their rate will be cut in half probably. But they're still very small in terms of market cap, so they fall into the micro cap space and even the nano cap space right now. So it's harder for them to get those more attractive yields, those, you know, low single digit yields. They have to find other ways to grow, and fortunately some of these companies like Thunderbird has done it organically, and they've done it through small acquisitions, and you know, it's just knowing the management and knowing what they're, you know, whether they're going to try to do it through debt or whether they're going to try to do it through you know, organic growth.
Well, where would you know, I mean, I've talked a bunch of times and that if it's the Dan and Chief's plumbing company, and we're doing fine, we've had this corporation for 40 years, and we've got 5 plumbing trucks, and we say, wow, things are getting pretty good. We want, you know, a 6 plumbing truck. And I'm guessing to buy the truck and totally outfit it and hire 2 plumbers, we're talking $80,000 or something like that. So if we walk into our local bank, I'm going to say, first of all, it better be a local bank. It better not be Citigroup, or they're going to say, don't let the door hit you in the ass, you two guys. And, and we're going to, and in today's world, I'm going to guess we both have to personal guarantee it, even though we have a corporation that hasn't missed a payment in 40 years. When the Fed does what they're doing, and you were to say, you know, if you go back to grad school or whatever, or even undergrad, you would say, when you lower the interest rates, it's going to do this, and this. But if all of a sudden you lower it only for a few people, I mean, I think that the chances of you and I getting a loan for that plumbing truck, unless we can go somewhere and at least get the truck part for, you know, on a special on the van or something, but you know what I'm talking about. None of that has jammed down to us. None of it's jammed down to the guy in a credit card. I mean, the idea that Amazon can you know, borrow at 2% and you and I are going to get a credit card thing in the mail wanting 24, you know, right. The Fed's giving money away. I mean, clearly, they are not focused on everybody benefiting. So now what you're saying, that my thought of the plumbing company, now it's even a small, really good company, isn't quite in the pool. What level do you have to be part of the, quote, gang? Where all of a sudden
you'd
it's 3%
you know,
money.
It would vary by industry, but you certainly would not be, you know, small. I would say in general, microcap companies are not going to fall in that space. Neither are small caps, and you're hoping that you're able to get, like Thunderbird is able to get their stock listed on the OTC, and that's like the sort of a process for them to start continuing to get growth organically and through cap, you know, through appreciation in their stock price, getting their story out there, to letting everyone know all the good stuff that's going on. They have managed to do this with no debt, and So that's another approach. Again, it works better in some industries than others because you're able to be more creative with your financing and your cash flow in an industry like media than you are, say, in the plumbing business. But you're right, there is a point you have to break through, and you know, if there's anything that we probably do need in terms of help for small business owners, I think it's access to that capital.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get a small business loan, but you have to kind of convince an investor base at some point, or somebody who's going to provide that capital at some point, that you're, you know, by adding this one additional truck, it's going to add, it's going to have a multiplying effect on your bottom line. So, it is tough, and you're right. The big get bigger, and the big get tax breaks, and all that as well. So, but these small companies have a lot of upside, and they have the chance to double. I mean, Thunderbird tripled their stock price was a triple this year. So, you know, you have, you know, there's benefits of investing in both.
Dan, I mean, you saw the
competition in the industry is an important thing. You know, can a small guy in an industry do well? And if they have the right niche and the right management team, they can. And that's where the homework comes in that we do. You know.
Two questions. The NRV saw this 742 on the initial jobless claims. It's wrapped its futures now about 8 points. You're in conferences all day, or are you available if somebody wants to call you?
I'm available. I mean, I'm available if somebody wants to call me, but I am in a conference most of the day. It's company conference, but yeah, absolutely.
All right, bud. Hey, good stuff as always.
Just one other like plug before I go is we got our 5-year number for the Creative High Income Fund, and we're at 7.5%.
Hey, good for you.
Which again, this is a bond fund, and that's traded Interactive Brokers. It's on the Interactive Brokers platform, and we're 50 basis points ahead of the index, again ahead of the net of fees.
That's great work.
So our 5-year number is also 50 basis points ahead of the bond aggregate index, so U.S. bond aggregate index. So
well, we won't hear from you for 2 weeks because next week is Thanksgiving.
Yes, have a great holiday.
You too.
And we'll
talk. We'll talk in 2 weeks. S&P futures down 11.
Yeah, we'll talk in 2 weeks.
We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Low and face Stocks and Jacks. Sometime I always miss from Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures is down 875. We dipped as low as 11. We dropped on these unemployment claims, 740. Supposed to be 7, way less than that. And NASDAQ Futures down 30. We got the Dow Futures down 59. So we keep getting bad numbers here, at least in some areas. DAX down 78.6%. FTSE down 39.6%. And the CAC around down 30.6%, so they're across the board there. I don't see that too often. Nikkei down 93.4%, Shanghai up 15.5%, Hang Seng, however, down 187.7%. Yesterday, and we slipped off on the close pretty dramatically last night. Dow is down 344, S&P's down 42, NASDAQ down 98. So after being pretty much unchanged all day, all of a sudden it slipped. Bonds, 0.86, down 2 basis points. The Bund, minus 0.56, down 1 basis point. Japan down 1 basis point to 0.01, barely hanging above zero. Oil down 20 cents, 41.62, but still pretty comfortably over $41. Brent down 2 cents, 44.32. Natural gas down 13 cents, 2.57. Man, what a nice short. It's like 3.02, but well, that's a tough contract to trade. RBOB 115 unchanged. Gold down 14.60, 18.59. Silver down 51 cents, 23.93. Copper down a penny, 318. Matty, what do you have for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. It looks like the big issue right now is on the Eisenhower Chief outbound side at just before US 20, which is exit 17. We have a crash blocking the two left lanes. Old Post Office to Wolf Road is up 27 minutes. Route 390, 40 minutes. So that's our biggest issue on the expressways right now, the outbound Ike. Inbound side looking okay. No issues on the Edens and Kennedy. That earlier crash on the Kennedy is all clear at River Road. Stevenson has been quiet all morning. Same for the south side expressways. Lakeshore Drive looking good. Off the expressways, there is a water main break on the north side at Damon and Dickens, and that's causing some delays with crews on the scene there. And then up in the northern suburbs, US 45 at Allenson Road, there is a crash. Weather today, it's going to be a lot warmer than it's been. Cloudy skies, a high of 64, but it'll be windy out there with wind gusts up to 30 miles per hour. So keep that in mind, but it'll feel nice when the wind's not in your face. Right now it's overcast and 49 going up to a high of 64. For our Phoenix listeners, partly cloudy skies with a high of 87 today. Right now it's clear and 59. In sports, it was the NBA draft last night, Chief, and the Bulls had the number 4 pick, and they took Patrick Williams, a 6'8 small forward out of Florida State. The Suns had the 10 pick. They took Jalen Smith out of Maryland. Chief.
Well, one time they had the number 3 pick, and they got Michael Jordan. This is not near as exciting, is it?
No, it's not.
I'd say it's nowhere near. God.
I'm just excited they're not drafting number 7 again for, like, the 10th year in a row. At least number 4, hopefully you have someone a little better. We'll see.
He's got the high ceiling, and he's 19 years old. We did that with Eddie Curry. Chandler finally got good 5 years after he left the Bulls.
Pretty much. Although I actually thought Curry started to get pretty good, too, and then he had the heart issue.
You know, he never came back from that.
No, he didn't.
I don't know why he... whatever. Frank, how are you, bud?
Good. Good. You're a lot more positive about their draft pick than I am.
That's Maddie. I didn't even know who he was.
So I thought they were, last I heard, they were going to try and get the guy in Europe, but he dropped.
I don't know that I'm positive necessarily. I think I'm neutral on it, but I think that everyone, when everyone says it's a three-man draft and you're drafting number four, you're not going to get a home run. So you're just trying to take the guy with the biggest upside you can, I think. And I think that's what they're doing here. So I'm in wait and see mode.
Remember when that happened to the Bears?
Well, the best part of the draft was whoever they picked in the second round had the same name as somebody that's 34 years old and playing overseas. And the sports announcers in Chicago went nuts. Why are we drafting a 34-year-old?
Yeah, Marko Simanovic is the guy they drafted in the second round.
Hey, Roy Hobbs did pretty
two
well.
Of them.
What, remember the draft the Bears had the 1 year? Who was the guy they ended up with where there was like three huge studs or four in the first round of them and the Bears were the next pick? Where it was like even.
Trubisky.
No, it was the running back. What the hell is his name?
Cedric Benson?
Cedric Benson, yeah.
Yeah, Benson.
Where they waited so long they almost blew the pick. They got it.
Yeah,
like
that was a terrible pick too, by the way.
Yeah. That's one where
that's the one where you really divided the team when you had a Super Bowl team, you know, on paper, and then they ended up making it to the Super Bowl with Thomas Jones as your leader and a very good running back, Pro Bowl running back, and then you bring in a rookie behind him, and it just pisses him off and pisses everyone else off.
Yeah,
and then you let him go, and he had a few more good years with the Jets and some other teams, and Cedric Benson was never any good.
He was the older brother of the guy from Notre Dame, Julius Jones, right?
Julius,
that's right. Yep.
So what's we got any big college games this week we should be betting on, doing something with? By the way, your man was all over the Colin last Friday, had the pick with the Arizona Cardinals.
Well, they didn't end up covering because they didn't kick the extra point. So
really,
yeah.
But I thought they were underdogs.
No. So the that was an interesting one. We talked about it on Monday when I filled in for you briefly. I mentioned it, but. Colin had two picks that he really liked, but because of time, we didn't get to his college pick. He really liked Wisconsin over Michigan, and Wisconsin blew out
Michigan.
Oh,
yeah, they killed him.
So, unfortunately, we didn't get to that one on the air. But the one he did put on the air, he said he liked the Arizona Cardinals -2.5 against Buffalo. And if you watch that game, Arizona had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter and looked like they were in control. Buffalo came back, ended up going ahead with 34 seconds left, up by 4. And it looked like the game was over. And then Arizona, of course, hits the Hail Mary with 2 seconds left to go up by 2. Well, typically you would kick the extra point, and they cover, winning by 3, you know, -2.5. But because they're up by 2 and there was only 1 second left on the clock, they decided, let's just take a knee in case the kick gets blocked and they run it back for 2 points and tie it. And so they didn't want to take any chances, so they just took a knee, forfeited the extra point, and cost bettors a ton of money.
Way back, this was BW, Frank, before Webby. The legendary coach, Paul Bear Bryant, Da Bear, he was, Alabama was favored by something, some number. And at the end of the game, they're on like the 40-yard line, and they're up by like 22. So he kicks a field goal. And everybody goes, Bear, why did you kick a field goal? It was like the last play of the game. He goes, what do you mean? I knew we were given 23, and I know a lot of Alabama alumni bet on the game. Only Bear could say that and get away with it back in those days.
Yeah, you would get suspended if you said something like that now.
Yeah, well, now everybody's all into the gambling, you know. But
yeah, I know, but you can't have coaches and players talking about it.
Right, but you could never, you would never in the 70s or 80s, you would never have you know, the casino. Being, you know, in sports betting, not only being at Wrigley Field, but actually being advertised there, you would never see that. I mean, didn't, speaking of the Paul Hornung that was, died this week, wasn't he suspended a year for just,
and Alex Karras.
They were just seen with a gambler. They weren't betting, were they? Or they weren't alleged to have been betting. They just were, it was consorting with gamblers. Maybe, how's that?
Or DeBartolo was the same thing.
Yeah. I can see Maddie consorts with gamblers.
People consort with me.
And you're a gambler.
I am. I'm not like a big money guy, but I do enjoy, for me,
it's, you know, I like watching the Cubs. I like watching the Bears. And, you know, there's a few teams I follow in sports, and I can watch them no matter what. But the other games, I don't have a lot of interest in watching unless I have a little action on it. And for me, you know, putting a little bet down, nothing big, nothing to, that's scary or anything like that, it just makes the game more enjoyable.
You're not like Dr. J and his bros. We had the house down on the south side. They would find some high school game on at 1 in the morning, and they'd sit there and watch. Hey, look at that left tackle. He made a great block. Those guys, they're into football like nobody's. I'm not like that, but
I don't gamble.
I don't gamble. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Not even.
No, I mean, there's the market, but that's different. I'm discipline-based there. Gambling, well, I never won, so why would I gamble?
Our buddies at the Tripoli Tap, who actually made this into sort of a business for themselves, led by my
all bookies.
they had the guys in Vegas to put the bet down, mm-hmm. and they bet a lot of the over-unders. And for the years that I knew these guys, and they've all gotten old enough that we're, I don't know if half of them are still around, but they had a group of four or five guys, and they all put money in, and, you know, reasonable dough to have guys in Vegas, and they would make sure they got the best line. But they loved the college game because of the vagaries of the injury report, meaning that there really isn't one. And then instead of, you know, some people being hurt or whatever, if they would bet on who's going to win, if they had like three or four guys out on the defense of both teams, they would bet the over-under and say that's a way better bet than trying to figure out who's going to win. Just figure nobody's going to make a tackle. And they didn't, you know. I mean, so those guys were up, I'm going to say, 4 or 5 years in a row that I knew them. And they would bet in ways that you wouldn't even, I mean, what's the sexiness of an over-under game? It's not the same as saying, geez, I know the Bears are going to win, you know. I mean, you don't walk into a cocktail party and said, nobody knew that these three linebackers were out except me, so I bet at the over, and the team that gave up usually 20 points gave up 40, and I won. Right? So it's just different. But they loved the college game because of the lack of information that was available to the public on injuries. That's pretty scary. But makes sense, right?
Yep.
So, Frank, we had a sell-off from hell yesterday at the last half hour, which we haven't seen in a while. We can't seem to buy the dippers. They're a little slow this morning here. We had Macy's same store sales down 20%. We've got, you know, some good news from a few firms and some really bad news from other firms. I think that some people that certainly people I know, I mean, in some of the suburbs were, a couple of them are refusing to shut down, but they basically told the mayor, hey, you know what? I made it to. I was hanging by a thread when I opened back up. You shut me down for two more weeks. Don't expect the sign to ever go on again. And I think a real lot of places are there, Frank. I don't think our politicians know that. I mean, I don't.
Oh, I think they know that. I don't think a lot of our fellow citizens care. Hence the risky behavior on their part. I mean, I don't care if they stay open. I'm not going to go there.
Well, that's right. You're one of those that is, you know, very, very concerned. I think that in a lot of industries, people were never available to be concerned. I mean, firemen can never.
I think you're right. Politicians aren't concerned, and even at the national level, they aren't.
But I'm saying the hypocrisy
about
to me,
the businesses or the people dying.
Well, but I think the hypocrisy is in the haves and the have-nots, as usual. I mean, does anybody really think, we got a firehouse right next door to us here, does anybody really think those guys were ever able to do what you do, Frank? Always have the mask on, socially distance? 8 people pound a fire truck to go to a fire, for God's sake. I don't care if you got a mask. Doesn't matter if you got a mask on or sit in somebody's lap.
Herd immunity is probably at the fire department by now.
Oh, police department, streets and sand people, 2 people in a garbage truck. You're not socially distancing there, are you? You're not going to ride in the back with the garbage. So, I mean, it's...
When I worked for the garbage, I was the guy that rode on the back, hanging on for dear life.
How bad was that?
It was pretty good. It was a Teamster's job.
I know, but a big bump must have wanted to throw you.
Yeah. I was strong enough to hold on. Now I don't have the grip of my hand anymore to even consider doing something.
Well, that was
like
back
that.
When you guys had to actually pick up the garbage, right?
Yeah.
There were two guys.
It was the 55-gallon drum.
There were.
You were unlucky.
Well, I was when I was young. I wasn't all that strong. I wasn't like football player strong or anything, but I was a pretty big kid. And one of the schools I was in was a coal-fired plant still. So for those of you that have never seen one of those, you got this huge fire, and then you got to clean out, essentially the ash and what do they call them, the clinkers, the big huge hunks of coal that they came out looking like a moon rock, right? That they sort of burned through, but they never actually. Well, you put these in these 55-gallon drums, and I would lean one over. I mean, Maddie, his ex-girlfriend used to say, "Oh, he's had noodle arms." The two of us would be like wheeling the thing around, leaning on the side. We had these two guys that would come up there with the ash haulers. And one guy was this pretty big black guy. The other dude, maybe 5'5", 145 on a bad day. And they would come in, and I'm thinking, how the hell are they going to get, because there's three steps to get out of this place, right? They would reach down, get their hand under it, one hand on top, and with a squat motion, they would pick the thing up totally and drop it on another 55-gallon drum. Then they would put their back up against it, grab it by the top, pull it down on their back, and walk up the steps. The little guy had to put one hand on the bottom and one on the top to steady it. The big guy just put it on his back with one hand on the top and just walked up the steps like he was carrying a book bag. And I'm thinking, wow, you don't want to mess with either one of these two dudes, and I'm never going to be that strong, and I never was. It was pretty amazing, Frank. Those guys did that all day long. And I'll bet they wouldn't have socially distanced. They'd have had the disease. But, hey.
Think of the guys that used to carry beer cases.
Yeah.
They didn't always use the lift.
No, yeah, no.
Or the dolly. I mean, you'd see guys carrying in, six cases, and it's like, geez.
Well, my uncle used to deliver ice. He could take anybody's hand in a handshake, and he would pretty much, he could crush you if he wanted to. Because they had how much of those were those ice things? They'd carry three or four of them up to the third floor or something. It's a bizarre world. Anyway, we got these jobless claims numbers. Things are not getting better. We've got places shutting down. We've got more and more people getting into the herd immunity. I mean, we've got 10,000 people a day that in 10 days from now are going to be over it. And hopefully all 10,000 and not any of them dead. What are we going to do here, Frank? Are we just going to wait for this vaccine and then they're going to demand everybody take it, and then everything's going to be okay, or declared okay, or what are we doing? What does the future hold? And but I don't think some of these places can be out of business another 3 months.
No, I have no idea what's going to happen. I know you hate it when I say that, but we aren't getting any guidance from anybody. I think right now we're still in a bull market, and it depends on what the volatility events are. I mean, if all of a sudden the Trump administration starts working with Biden on distribution of the vaccine, the SPOOs are going to be up 100 points, without a doubt.
Well,
and there's, I'd be wary, but I think, in the short long term or the long short term, we're still in a bull market. The market seems to shrug off the pain that people are feeling pretty easily.
If you look at the market numbers, you just look at the charts, you feel that. And that's what you hear us here on CNBC all day. And that's what's obviously right in front of your face. Me, because of my ridiculous upbringing, and look at why I think this is occurring, and you get the, if we're down again today, reasonably heavy, which I don't think we will be, but if we are, you're going to find that the Fed put in, a third of $1 trillion last Monday, and it's worn off in a week. I mean, I can't divorce the...
And we can't get that money to people without jobs, or we can't pay their rent, or their mortgage, or can't buy food.
Right.
It's insane.
Well, we just had Dan Janitis on talking about a couple of companies he really loves. These guys are paying 10% for a preferred stock, which might be a good investment for some of my people. I'll check it out, but I mean, Dan has already probably checked it out. But why aren't those guys part of the 2% money group? I mean,
I see,
why aren't college loans part of the 2% money?
Exactly, group? Exactly. I mean, why? What is wrong here, Frank? I mean, why the market is going up? Yes, it's a bull market, but does it mean that the market's going to be we're going to get rid of the S&P 500? We're going to go back to the OEX where I traded for 19 years, and we're going to have the 100 biggest stocks, and they're just going to go up constantly because they're going to be 90% of the economy. I mean, that we could do that. That would be fascist.
We still have stocks that are, you know, five or six stocks that are 60-70% of the movement in the market itself.
Right.
I mean, so are we only going to trade five stocks and forget the rest?
Well, we have for quite a while.
I know. That's why you and I are skeptics.
Well, I mean, I tell you what, Frank, I know you're planning on entering the business one of these days, and the business would love you. But, I talk to clients from the different places that I do business for, and it is really bizarre. I mean, the difference between even people that I know we talk to, like at the end of last year, what do you want to be in next year? I want to be conservative. I want to be in a bunch of dividend stocks. Okay, so we put them in, you know, a lot of really good companies that are dividend stocks. Every one of those companies, they're all down. I mean, they're in the oil business or someplace. I mean, they're not. I mean, there's a few dividend companies that are up, but most of them, they're not participating. Bottom line is, everybody who has a portfolio looks at the quote NASDAQ, or maybe, and if you strip away the top 15-20 stocks up until the last couple of weeks, really, I mean, you've got no movement anywhere, or you might be down. So,
Definitely. In the past 30 years or 20 years, we've gone to trading times earnings to trading times revenue.
Yep.
Which is totally insane.
Well, we did that right before 2000. We did that in 2000.
But you have to trade the trend.
Well, we didn't even trade revenue. We traded hits in 2000, dot-bomb hits, and then revenue. Well, yeah. But
right.
So, but now, I mean, I've never, normally when I have the, I always stick with, for my people, I always stick with the highest liquidity places. I'm either going to be in the Spiders, I'm in the Qs, I'm going to be in the Russell. I never had as much concern over which one of the three I picked as now. I mean, granted, one year to NASDAQ could be up, you know, whatever, 7 or 8, and in the S&P would be up, you know, 6 or 7. I mean, they never were equal, but you never had to worry about, geez, at the end of the year, the Russell's like down and the NASDAQ's up like 25, or, you know, type of thing. I mean, what the hell? I mean, it's really, I mean,
and the Russell is America.
Yeah.
I mean, people forget that. Oh, it's 2,000 companies that are pretty good snapshot of how Main Street America is doing.
Well, even with the huge rally we've had, we're right back. Well, actually, we're back up from, we got down to 100 in March, so in the last few weeks, it's shot back up. So we're actually at pretty much all-time highs in the Russell as well. So, or in the IWM. So, but it took like all year to get there. And, you know, it makes it very difficult, I mean, to pick some of these things. But we've got the VIX coming down today. It shot up yesterday. Now, normally we're going to go down in November or December because we've got holidays and all those kinds of things. But we had the 1 year, a few years ago, we had the huge down Christmas Eve, and then we bounce back the day after Christmas. Are we going to see some action here, you think, Frank, or no?
Well, we're going to see action because this transition is fraught with volatility events.
I don't see how it's not going to happen. I don't see how it doesn't happen.
What would happen if we actually bombed the nuclear sites in Iran? I mean, that's the type of thing that makes me a little wary.
Well, it also makes me wary. That how do you go do that without going to the Senate and getting approval?
Come on, Tom.
I know. Where did we lose that one?
Lost it maybe in the Gulf of Tonkin.
Yeah,
55 years ago.
But somewhere along the line, somebody should drag this Constitution up that everybody always talks about. Anyway, Frank, we'll talk at you on Monday. S&P futures down 550 now, and NASDAQ futures down 22. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jocks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex. Offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. Dax Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.